Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Leadership, wherever it comes from, it always comes in handy when you're building something from scratch. Someone has to take responsibility. And if that leadership is dished up the right way, that same someone maybe gets to even take credit for it. And in the case of Susan Packard, she can take a great deal of credit for HGTV, MSNBC, The Food Network, and others. She joins us now by phone to talk about how she built leadership teams to achieve those iconic successes in the cable television industry. Susan Packard, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. I'm delighted to be here.
When you set out in your professional life, did you think about leadership as something that could be taught or something that you were going to achieve?
Well, when I started out, I'm not sure that I thought about leadership at all. I was just trying to make a paycheck, and I wasn't sure what my career would look like. But soon into it, into the media end of things, the cable media end of things, it was very exciting for a young person. And I thought, well, I may stay in this line of work, so that probably means there's a whole lot I have to learn. But I wasn't really thinking about I have to learn that to become a leader.
How long were you into your career before you started to understand the patterns that you write and talk about these days?
I would say it was probably mid-career. So I was at CNBC at the time. NBC had decided to get into the cable business. And so their first foray into cable programming was CNBC. And I was on the ground floor of that. And since I was on the ground floor and I could help to build it that way, I had a good view of what it meant to be in leadership positions for new businesses. And so I think at that point in time, I said to myself, you know, I'm gaining a lot of the requisite skills, and I'm seeing the people in leadership weren't born leaders. They've just garnered a whole requisite of skills to get to that position, and I could probably do that too.
It says something for innovation, because in reading your blogs and in reading about you and your successes, so much of it has to do with having the opportunities that starting at the ground floor, that only starting at the ground floor can bring you.
Well, it's a unique set of opportunities if you're on the ground floor. But, you know, to be on the ground floor takes a lot of risk. So you have to be willing to roll the dice a little bit and know that it's quite possible, in fact, it's likely, that what you're trying to build is not going to get built. That's the statistics in new businesses. But on the other hand, I really saw that I loved being on the ground floor and building things. So for me, my DNA was such that I was at the right place.
And you mentioned a lot of young people in ground floor operations. They'll tend to be more risk takers. They don't have as much at stake. But does that otherwise bring something to the equation that we don't get sometimes when we're stuck up at the top in these sort of staid cultures?
Yes. Certainly every generation mm-hmm. brings a new perspective because every generation is reared a different way. And comes with their own set of behaviors. So, yes, I guess one thing that you could turn to with people who are young is energy. They have a lot of energy, and you need a lot of energy to be building businesses. But every generation brings their own unique sets of perspectives.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Susan Packard. She was one of the founding executives of HGTV, CNBC, The Food Network, and others. She will be speaking soon in Columbus. For more information about that, you can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. You refer to athletics in your blog posts a lot, mm-hmm. and I'm from the same generation that didn't have many athletic opportunities. I think the volleyball team, maybe, and I'm 5'4". they kind of laughed at me when
Good luck with that.
Exactly. Well, they actually let me on the team, but I just got the Spirit Award every year. But in one, you use MSU football coach Mark D'Antonio's remark, I'm an MSU grad as well, about needing more presence. And I wonder, what does that mean, like, what does that mean in the work world?
Right. Well, first of all, the whole analogy of team sports is an important one I discovered as I was advancing in my career, because there's so many parallels between team sports and business, and it's not a surprise given they're both led predominantly by men. But so that was helpful to me to see that, and that in the book I'm coming out with talks about those kinds of parallels and how they're helpful to a woman when she's trying, when she's learning to advance. But to answer your question on presence, so that's one of my points in the book, is it's what I call composure. But for women more than men, because it's trickier for women to be leaders than it is for men for any number of reasons, carrying themselves with a presence of being in control and being able to handle situations rationally is very important. And that's what I mean by presence.
You also talk about the concept of gamesmanship. And can you explain what gamesmanship is and how it relates to women in the workplace?
Right. It's the organizing principle of my book that's going to be coming out. And it's because, as I recognize that business is a team sport, it's a strategic way of thinking when you're in the workplace that allows you to see a bigger picture. So you look at your workplace as a large playing field, and it's bigger than you. There are lots of dynamics going on all of the time. And for women especially, it helps to get us out of our heads, you know, sort of neutralizes what could otherwise be self-defeating behaviors. And it allows us to see, if we're willing to see this, that there's lots of winning and losing every day in the workplace. And if you lose one day, the next day you wake up and, you know, you go back and you step up to win the next day. So that's the parallel. And then in the book, there are a number of lessons or rules that are part of that.
You talk about, in, I think, a blog post about a fellow that you were trying to work a deal with who was a lot shorter than you. And how you, with, you know, you just started, I don't know if you remember, I don't remember if you wore, you lowered your heel height or you just sat down more or something like that, but you didn't talk to him about it. You just perceived he was, acted differently towards you when he was looking you in the eye than he did when he was looking up at you.
And it's really hard to look up at me because I'm 5'2". But
you wear some pretty high heels, though.
Yeah, I did. I always they made me feel like I had my A game going. But yes, in this situation, it was something that I recognized, and I think again, women are really good at this. Is we're very intuitive and we read rooms well. In this case, I was reading the individual, and the first couple of times we were trying to do a negotiation, he was always standing and pacing, and I would sit, and I'd say, please sit, and he wouldn't sit. And it just seemed like he was uncomfortable. I'm not even sure what moment in time I realized this, but I said, you know what? I wonder if instead of me coming in these big high heels, I came in flats and he could look me in the eye, actually look down a little at me, if that would have any change in the dynamic of this negotiation, because it wasn't going well. And sure enough, we both sat down at the same time. He sat, we worked together, and we ended up getting a good deal together out of it. So, you know, I don't even, what can I say about that?
Well, I know there's 50 podiatrists out there going, thank God, you know, you got into the flats. But then there's another 50 people out there saying, what you did was just adjust yourself to the man's world and did it the man's way. And how do you, you know, respond to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I think that's a good point. I would say that I wasn't adjusting myself to a man's world. I was figuring out how I could win. And, you know, That was one way that I could get a good deal for my company. I tried it and it worked. So, you know, gamesmanship, first of all, let's deal with the reality of at least the business workplace.
Right.
Although if you look the whole world, you could see that whether it's politics or business, whatever the case may be, that these leadership positions are occupied by men. Predominantly. So you to work successfully and to get yourself advanced in these organizations, you have to figure out how to work with men. If you don't figure out how to work well with men, they're your gatekeeper to continuing to advance for most career sectors. So I think it's more about how do you successfully network with men and women in the organization, and how do you comfortably successfully work with men and women in your organizations?
I've been to the big Women for Economic and Leadership Development keynotes before, and I know there's usually men in the audience, and I know there are men listening now, and I'm sure men will read your book. And what do you make of what they read or hear and learn about themselves in terms of how you succeeded in a business world dominated by men?
Well, there's some great things that men bring to the workplace, and that they, unfortunately, I never had women role models because there were so few women.
Right.
It wasn't that, I wasn't respectful of women or they weren't respectful of me. There just weren't any leadership positions occupied by women. So men taught me a whole lot. And one of the things that they taught me was to not take myself so seriously and to have a sense of humor about the workplace. And, there are some mistakes that are grave mistakes. But for the most part, we're just human beings. And if we can work as hard as we can, and if we can try to push ourselves to be as good as we can be, we're just human. So mistakes are made. But so I tried to sort of abandon that whole beyond perfectionist kind of thing that a lot of women have, just to relax a little more at work. So men are good at that, and actually I think it's good modeling for women. Having said that, men are also more comfortable with men, and I guess you would say that's human nature, but women are not going to get into the numbers of leadership even close to what men are if more women are not moved up the chain. It's just not going to happen.
Right. You had a lack of leadership of women when you first got into the business. Did you feel compelled, or did it just come more naturally to you? Different people respond differently to help women advance.
Yes, and I think that was culminated for me when I was made chief operating officer at Home and Garden Television. Partly looking at our customer, our viewer base, which was predominantly women, the founding group, all male except me, there were a lot of reasons that I felt it was important for us to advance women in our organization. So I put programs in place there, had some good HR partners to work with, so that the number of women in the executive roles could advance more quickly.
My guest is Susan Packard. She's an executive, one of the founding executives of HGTV and Food Network, CNBC, and others. We will continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Just because you have one good idea, the market's going to pass you by. You have to have in your organizations some discipline around innovation.
That's cable television innovator Susan Packard getting ready to tell a story about how HGTV's iconic Dreamhouse promotion first started. Susan Packard is still with us. Susan, I wanted to listen to that quote from one of your speeches because I wanted to talk about the issue of discipline in the process of leading.
Right. Well, especially in the process of innovation,
okay.
Because the best innovators are very creative, entrepreneurial types of people, and they can be tough to manage. And so you have to have some discipline around working innovation, at the same time allowing creative people the flexibility to to have, you know, some brilliant thinking around new business ideas and new ways, maybe perhaps process, because innovation is both product and process. So I would say, you know, we all knew that as we were building the business, we were all entrepreneurial people. But fortunately, we had a few birthdays under our belt, so we had been management people as well. We had had to put systems in place at other companies so that when we started to build Home and Garden Television, we knew that it had to be a cross-section of entrepreneurial people as well as, I guess I would say, more left-brain people who were really strong with process.
And, of course, the dream house went from dream to reality, but not before people said, "Are you crazy?"
Well, we said, "Are you crazy?" to
right.
Ken Lowe, our founder.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, he's a very entrepreneurial guy, a very innovative guy, and he's still there. He's chairman of Scripps Networks Interactive, and he came in and he said, "We need to do a national sweepstakes and give away a home." And the four or five of us building this business looked at each other and, "How are we? What is he talking about?" Anyway, he had an idea. It was a great vision, and he had a great partner, which is a big part of even a big part of innovation, is thinking about who can I partner with that will improve my product so much more dramatically than if I were to go it alone. So, yeah, Dream Home Today, last year we had over 77 million entries. It's been the biggest promotion in cable history.
Wow. That idea of partnering, for women, there's a conflict there sometimes. They want to make sure everybody knows what's going on. But when that case that you described, when he came to you all with the idea of the dream house, he had already set up partnerships and he had already had the idea. Is there a fear of going behind people's backs that women have, pulling together those kinds of partnerships without bringing the whole team in first?
Yeah, well, I was the only woman in the room
okay.
of many men, so I don't think any of us had too much fear of anything. We had built up a lot of trust at that point.
Okay.
But actually, I think women are better at partnering
okay.
than men. Women are great collaborators, and there's not a whole lot of ego in at least the senior women I've met.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to do a good job. You know, you asked earlier about men, and men carry a fair amount of ego. You know, their work is their life in large part, and so it's harder to partner. And also entrepreneurial people, it's hard to partner if you're an entrepreneurial person because you really want your fingerprints all over whatever business you're creating.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a discipline to saying we need to partner and then to go through a process of deciding who it is you should work with.
You talked about it a little bit earlier, but I wanted to bring it up again in terms of this idea of discipline, and that is the art of imperfection. And how people just have to relax and so forth in the workplace. It doesn't all have to be, heavens knows, thank goodness we don't all dress like men anymore. but were you ever a perfectionist? Was this something you had to learn, or were you one of those people that just went in and you just got it and have been sort of out there from the beginning?
No, absolutely not. I always, in the very first years, I would always overdo things, but I was observant. So I looked at my workplace, and I tried to understand what made people successful. And what I found was how important speed was. And so I was sacrificing speed for perfection, and as a senior leader, I would tell, if you were to ask me this today, I would tell my team, speed is more important than perfection. You just have to keep moving. You have to keep building. You have to stay ahead of your consumer. And you can't do that by, you know, double-checking spell check.
One of the things I liked about HTV was that it was something my spouse and I watched together at first, at the beginning. It wasn't a girly network, and you're telling me that the demographic was largely women. But it wasn't just about decorating. Was that important, or was it difficult to come up with the right recipe for that when you're the only woman in a room full of men?
Well, I have to give Ken Lowe the credit here, because he had built 3 or 4 homes with his wife, and he really came up with the whole vision of the business. And then he recruited me, and then we started recruiting the rest of the organization. And it was a nice blend. It was a nice mix of home improvement, which tended to skew a little bit male, mm-hmm. and design, which tended to skew female. But, you know, in the early days, to try to get one of our audiences to pay attention, which was the cable community, which was all men, the trade ads that we would put in place were purposely skewed with male messages so that they would understand that this isn't just a, you know, they were happy to sign up for ESPN. You know, if you give me 20 channels of ESPN, I'll put them all on my cable system. But when it came to women's networks, it was a harder sell. So we had to tailor our messages.
Someone was asking me earlier, are you going to ask her about how much they took from public media, from PBS?
Oh, right. We're grateful to PBS for all. They were the trailblazer. They were, for this kind of genre, they were.
Well, everything from,
This Old House.
This Old House.
New Yankee Workshop.
Right?
Yep.
Right. And then the auction, or what is it? I can't think of it. Antiques Roadshow, right. Antiques
Roadshow. Right.
It's killing us, but, you know, no, it was great. You have said that the key to your success has been your business culture. And culture is a very complicated term. So what do you mean by culture in your case?
What I mean by it is that it's the personality of your organization and it's your operating set as well. So it's sort of a value set and an operating set. It's how people treat one another. It's how your products are built. It's a language. It's a communication language that helps people to be successful in a given place of work, because you understand what the expectations are once the culture is defined at an organization. And they're all different. You know, there's no one right culture. When I speak, I talk about how I worked at HBO, I worked at NBC, and then Scripps, night and day in terms of their cultures, but all very successful. The important thing is to be able to define, articulate what the core values of an organization are, and then to talk about them frequently so that your team, your staff, knows what you're talking about.
So how do you do that? Do you do that in everyday conversation, or is it something where you do a sit-down?
It's both. If we would have brown bag lunches and we would, you know, just kind of look at one core value during one of those, we would have all-hands meetings, large group meetings. We would look at a core value. Because in the beginning, I mean, the founding team created the core values for Home and Garden Television and Scripps Networks. But today, 20 years later, most of the organization wasn't around, you know, year one. So what do these words mean to them? You have to bring them to life and tell stories about them and give them color so that your employees know how to be successful at your place of work.
How much does likability affect a woman's ability to move up? Is it different for women than it is men?
Yeah, it's incredibly different. It's one of the biggest challenges that women have as leaders. And we haven't figured out how to fix this one yet, so we have to acknowledge it and carry ourselves in a way that is not a turnoff to people in the organization. And Sheryl Sandberg's doing a campaign now, a bossy campaign, which you may have seen. And these words, you know, bosses, men are called boss, women are called bossy, men are called persuasive, women are called pushy. These words are damaging to women. And what I'm curious about is if they were to take women who were around when Title IX, you know, they knew nothing but Title IX, and they were to look at them as leaders today, whether there would be a difference in how these women carried themselves and how they felt about all of this. Because part of it is our issue, is that we as women, likability is important to us. And I'm not sure that's true for men. In some cases it is, but...
But if you examine the psyche of women and men at the top,
mm-hmm.
then we might have something more clear-cut to talk about.
Right. And with my book, I interviewed a young CEO, and when we talked about Title IX, she said, I never knew a world outside of Title IX. That's the world I grew up in. And she's a very competitive, dynamic leader. And I think team sports make a big difference to little girls. And if you can play captain, that makes a big difference. And all of those things are experiences with winning and losing, so that when you get in the workplace, you realize, oh, that's what this is about.
Yeah, when I was on that volleyball team, and, you know, of course, I never played. I was the shortest person in the league, practically. But they gave me that spirit award. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a spirit award. It was the only team I'd ever played on.
Yeah. Yeah, and getting rewarded and having people, you know, whether it's parents or friends of parents that are on the sidelines, and you're a little girl and you're kicking that soccer ball and they're saying, you go, Joni, you go, Annie, you know, and just hearing this reinforcement again and again is all important for, you know, a girl's psyche as she gets older.
And without it, where were we getting it? Anywhere?
Well, I think certain women are just graced with a competitive spirit that allows them to succeed, you know, whether it's in a workplace or whether it's in the political arena or wherever it is where you mm-hmm. see women as leaders. They have a competitive spirit. They're comfortable with it. They're willing to exhibit it, you know, outwardly. Men have no problem with that. But most women, many women, do. But I in all of my interviews, I asked the CEOs that I talked to 10 CEOs about generational differences. And they all acknowledge that the younger generation of women, they're not seeing... The lean-in issue is less of one for the younger generations of women.
You brought up politics and women in politics, and when I was covering state government and politics 20-odd years ago, there were actually more women in the state legislature than there are now. And there are a lot of theories about why that is, but it's just the nature of politics is somewhat of a turnoff to women as a rule. What about in, let's just say, the cable industry back in the day when I was watching HTV and there were no commercials, the golden halcyon days for the viewers? you were the only woman in the room. How has it changed since then?
Are you asking about the numbers?
Yes.
Okay. In my business, in the media cable programming business, it's actually, we're in a pretty good place relative to the rest of business, the rest of industry. I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but I know, for example, at Scripps Networks, over 50% of the organization in a management role is female. And networks like A&E, Lifetime, and others are run by women. So senior women find their way into a lot of the programming network slots, but we're still a minority. I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but I would guess that CEOs of networks is probably 25% female and 75% male.
Coming up, we're going to talk with the senior HR business partner with Fifth Third Bank about her position and how that impacts you know, where women go in an organization, but you often will find women in HR positions at companies. And some people think, well, you know, you could be COO, your HR. How important is that to have women in those kinds of positions in companies today?
Well, one of the things I tell women, and this is a lesson I learned, is if you can grab a line position, if you can get yourself into a line position, that should be, if you know enough about yourself to feel that you want to advance in an organization, then you have to do line work. And by that I mean, you know, an operating position, a position that actually drives revenue, that has management of a P&L. And the reason I learned this is early days of my career at HBO, I had a great mentor named Bill Grumbles, and he had some fancy title. I think he was SVP or something. But I went to him one day because I was doing sales work, and I saw that there was a job that was a PR job where they schmoozed with celebrities, they got to go to Hollywood premieres, and I thought that'd be a great job. I want that job. So I went up to him and I said, look, I really want to apply, you know, such and such just left. I'd like to apply for that job. What do you think? And he said to me, he had this Texas accent, Susan, you want to run a company someday? And I looked at him, and I think I was 25 years old. I hadn't really thought much about it, but I guess, yeah. And he said, don't you dare take that PR job. You need to stay in line work. And and from that day, so I've told women the degree to which they can get line experience in organizations will make the difference in terms of them having an ability to run a company.
Well, Susan Packard, thank you so much for joining us today to share your insights.
Thank you, Anne. It's been a pleasure.
And if you want to learn more about Susan's appearance next week with the Women for Economic and Leadership Development, you can go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We've been talking about women in leadership with Susan Packard. She's a founding executive of HGTV, CNBC, and the Food Network. Joining us now is this year's president of the Board of Directors for Women for Economic and Leadership Development, WELD, and vice president of Human Resources for Fifth Third Bank, Susan Zielinski. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Nice to be here today.
The image of Rosie the Riveter is used in the logo for WELD to pay tribute to the women who challenge the traditional perception of women's capabilities in the workplace. Are we at a point now where women are acknowledged for their brand of ability or their ability to mimic the capabilities of men?
I think we are reaching a point where the value that women bring to the table
is intrinsic.
Yes, it's attributed to women themselves, and it's not a reflection or a mirror image of what the man brings to the table.
We were just talking about the HR component of a company. Mm-hmm. And tell me about your role there and how you feel about it in terms of building and helping bring women up through the ranks.
Absolutely.
Women and anyone who's been marginalized, perhaps.
Right. I think that human resources is an area where you get the opportunity to be a steward of your organization's culture. So you and Susan Packard were talking before about organizational culture and the impact that has on the success of a company. And HR is an area where you are focusing on the diversity of the leadership team that you have and your employee population overall. You're absolutely focusing on leadership development and identifying emerging leaders. And you have the opportunity as well to be looking at the engagement of your employees and what motivates them and what inspires them to do their best for the customer.
Study after study has shown that companies that have more women at the table mm-hmm. are more successful, bottom line successful. How much of that is that so accepted? And are we so beyond that now that you don't have to bring that up at times and re-educate your constituents?
I think it's still an opportunity. When we take a look at something that WELD sponsors, which is the Central Ohio Leadership Census, we do that in partnership with Otterbein University, an amazing partner with WELD, and also with the Institute on Women. The 2013, as we call it, COLC, Central Ohio Leadership Census, indicated that overall we still are lacking in females being on boards and women in top executive positions in Central Ohio. We've made some great progress, but we still have opportunities there. Typically, you would see with nonprofit organizations, we're at about 40% of those have women as board of director members. The colleges and universities are just right behind that. But when we get to the public companies, the for-profit companies, we're looking at about 13% of those companies have females on their board of directors.
I wrote a column some years ago for the Dispatch about the dearth of women on boards and commissions that are appointed by the governor, so public mm-hmm. boards and commissions. Mm-hmm. Someone said, well, what does that really matter? And someone else said, well, it's a resume builder. This is a process. It doesn't just happen, you know, they don't spring like, you know, from the half shell. It's a building blocks process.
Absolutely. That's something that WELD is pretty committed to. We have a corporate board training program that we bring to our membership, and it actually prepares women to serve on boards and to serve in executive positions.
Do they need preparation any more than men do when they're starting out on boards?
I think they do, because I think that traditionally, they've not expected that they're going to land on a corporate board. And so to be able to provide the framework of what does it take to get on a board, if you look at your resume, your portfolio of work now, you want to be on a board 5 to 10 years from now. What do you need to do to gain the right experience to be prepared for that and be a valuable contributing member of a board?
And for people who have never been on a board, how big of a deal is it to be on a board? What do you bring to the table there?
Absolutely. The board provides that foundational strategic direction for organizations. You know, boards provide the overall compass for a company, and oftentimes they're also a part of leading the company in terms of how it serves its constituencies, how it serves its customer base. So having that broader gender diverse perspective, what women bring to the table as far as their breadth of perspective that they have, the experience base that they bring, and the knowledge that they bring of the communities that a company might serve. That is all important when you look at guiding a company that in that way.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about leadership for women with Susan Zielinski. She's vice president in human resources for Fifth Third Bank. She's also president of the board of directors for Women for Economic and Leadership Development. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. 13% was the number you gave for the women on serving on boards in private companies in the Central Ohio area.
Right.
How does that compare to other major metro areas?
I don't have the statistics mm-hmm. in front of me here, but generally the numbers are pretty reflective of the national figures overall.
It's pretty typical.
It's pretty typical. We still have a lot of opportunity for more gender diversity in top executive positions and in board service as well.
Are you seeing more of a push down from the top or a failure to push up from the bottom at this point?
I think that it is a failure to push up from the bottom. One of the things that WELD is committed to is reaching backwards and being able to ensure that we are creating the opportunities and the programs that will help our next generation of female leaders be ready for those leadership positions. So our mission is really to advance and to develop women's leadership so that we're contributing to the economic prosperity of the community.
Susan Packard mentioned it. I know other women who are at executive, senior executive levels in corporate America have said it before. They mostly, their mentors tended to be men because there just aren't women there or weren't there when they were getting started. To what extent are men who are good at recruiting and mentoring women valued in the workplace?
I think they're highly valued. I know that I value them as a human capital partner at Fifth Third, we have a great team that does that. For example, I'm very honored to be able to work on an executive team that actually has 5 women out of the 9 executives at Fifth Third Bank serving in that executive team, and 2 of those individuals are line of business leaders.
Line of business meaning?
Meaning they drive a for-profit center. Yeah, absolutely.
And what Susan Packard said resonated with you.
It did, indeed. I think in order for you to be an effective leader at the top, you have to understand the business at that core level, what it takes to drive profit, what it takes to respond to your customers, and how, at the end of the day, you're going to lead processes that innovate your product.
How do you, in your personal opinion, has the culture changed in corporate America? Banking is the most staid of all corporate entities in a lot of people's minds. Does it deserve that reputation? And how has it changed over time for you?
It's changed dramatically. You know, when I first started was... do I have to say it back in the 80s?
Sure.
Yeah.
Good company.
you know, I think there was a combination of value for what you brought to the table, but there was also a traditional role that you were supposed to play or a role that you were supposed to take if you wanted to be a woman in business. Susan Packard mentioned, you know, some of the staff support functions as opposed to necessarily running a line of business. I think that that was the perception at one time. I think that is changing dramatically. I think companies like Fifth Third Bank and Scott's Miracle Grow Company, that is the presenting sponsor for the Weld keynote event, Cardinal Health, who is our Central Ohio Leadership Census Award winner last year. Those types of companies have recognized that diversity at the top is important. And I think there is much less differentiation of you're a man or you're a woman, as opposed to are you a valuable partner?
I asked Susan Packard this question right off the bat, and I thought I might ask you, when you started out in your professional life, did you think about leadership as something that you were going to learn, that could be taught, that you wanted to achieve?
I absolutely thought of it as something I wanted to achieve. I had it as a career objective, and I believed that it could be taught. When I started out, I was at Columbia Gas Distribution Companies, and I actually taught management skills training. So it is something that I do think that you can learn as a leader. One of the most important aspects of that is emotional intelligence. And I think that that's a piece that every leader needs to have. Susan referred to a lot of the characteristics of an emotionally intelligent leader. And that, I do believe, is something that you can train yourself and learn to be better at, particularly with the right mentors and with a good coach and with some self-introspection.
It's easy to cast her story about the guy who is kind of short and didn't feel comfortable talking with her when she towered over him in her high heels as in a pejorative way, like she was tricking him and that sort of a thing. And, you know, there's been a lot of pejorative references to that, how women manage men and that sort of a thing. How does that, that doesn't really what it's all about. It's something more humane, I hope.
Absolutely. I think that you need to approach your relationships at work from the perspective of managing the relationship and looking at the outcome or the goals that you hope to accomplish and not looking at how am I going to manage or manipulate this particular situation. So for me, I saw that more as Susan really taking a look at her relationship management piece and recognizing, being socially aware of the impact she had on others, and adjusting that, whether that was a man or a woman. You know, I think that she made the adjustments, but she made them because of a certain impact that she thought she might be having on someone.
And we were talking as well about generational differences. And a lot of the people that you're bringing up through the ranks now haven't lived without Title IX, which, of course, is the athletic the laws governing athletic access to athletics in public colleges and universities and schools. What do you notice is the biggest difference? And is it all just an advantage to have been grown up in that era, or is there some disadvantage to it, too?
I do notice in general that young women today are more confident. I think that they see many more opportunities and possibilities. I know my own daughter, I think, feels like she could be anything she wants to be, and she doesn't feel pigeonholed into what traditionally had been female roles. And I think a large part of that is, you know, shifts and changes in the economic, you know, landscape that we have and the education system as well. So I, too, was a volleyball player. Had that opportunity to see that. I was captain of my team. but Susan's points were very well made, that, you know, it's that resiliency that you learn. And I think the younger generations are more resilient. They're more comfortable with change.
Once they get into that real team thing, but up to a certain point, we also talk often about how they're rewarded for every little thing they do. And is that been a disadvantage to a certain degree?
I think it can be. You know, everyone in the gym getting a trophy because
right.
they went to the gym as opposed to there was a first, second, and third place winner. I think that it is important to be able to gain a skill set around, I wasn't at the top this time, or I have more to learn. I have an opportunity to be better. And how am I going to do that and be resilient to react to that and strive for, you know, winning the next time around?
Yeah, the failure thing, that it's okay to fail. There's a lot of fear of that.
I think there can be, absolutely. And I was very, really interested in the conversation you had with Susan Packard around perfection and that piece of needing to prove something. I think historically, you know, women in the workforce have been in a place of needing to prove something, that they have earned the right to be there. And I think that that is diminishing significantly. You know, I think women are learning to relax in their expertise and the value that they bring to the table.
Not feeling like they have to work twice as hard, twice as fast, all of that kind of a thing. However, the issue of speed came up, certainly in my career, in journalism, that's a huge thing, speed. We take it for granted, but not everybody does.
I think that's true. You know, at the end of the day, organizations are there to get certain results, right? So the quicker you can come to those results with the least amount of resources, the better you're going to be able to respond to your stakeholders and, you know, get things to market. So I think it is important that speed is critical. And sometimes, you know, that old adage of good enough is good enough and you don't have to be perfect at it is a good one to follow.
Susan Zielinski, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Susan Zielinski, she's a vice president and senior human resources business partner with Fifth Third Bank and president of the board of directors for Women for Economic and Leadership Development. I want to thank the All Sides staff today, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, for your pitching in on the show when people can't really hear you, associate producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Jocelyn Smallwood, Olivia Rojas, Julia Hyder, Joel Nadler, Leticia Wiggins, Emmy Beach, Joel Nadler. He is our student intern from an alternative high school, Linworth Alternative and Worthington City Schools. He has been as valuable a partner in our organization as any of our interns have been, and they would all say that as well. Joel, we wish you so much luck going forward in your senior year of high school. Video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is a composer of our theme music. Thank you so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.